So good morning, everyone. So you've no doubt, most of you here anyways, may have heard the really corny joke of the pilot on a plane who comes on the PA system and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I have some good news and bad news." And you probably all want to hear the bad news first, so I'm going to give it to you. The bad news is that we're totally lost. We have no idea where we're going. The good news is that we're making excellent time and getting there. You didn't get it. Okay, that's fine. Anyways, it's a corny joke, but it's meant to highlight the importance of knowing where you're going, of having your destination clearly mapped out. Last week, Father Laszlo outlined for us our parish mission. As you were driving in here, you probably saw these banners out on the in the parking lot on the light posts outlining our mission. And that mission is a threefold mission: to love God, to love others, and to make disciples. To love God, to love others, and make disciples. Now, this is not just an arbitrary, made-up mission. These three things happen to come from the lips of Jesus himself: to love God, to love others, and to make disciples. And today, what we're going to be doing is focusing on the first of those three, this threefold mission. So the first is love of God, what it means to love God, and why is it important in our lives to love God. So for the ancient Israelites, the ancient Jews, they had about 613 laws and commandments that they needed to follow. So they had the Ten Commandments, and we all know what they are, but in addition to that, they had a plethora of all these other commandments or laws. And it was the job of the scribes, who are a group of individuals who were charged with the task of interpreting these laws and applying them to our everyday life. And since there was 613 laws, that's a lot of laws, it was a favorite pastime for the scribes to argue and debate one another as to which one of these 613 laws was the most important. And one day, one of these scribes approaches Jesus and asks him what he thinks is the most important of these 613 commandments. And no doubt, the scribe approaches Jesus because he had seen Jesus do all these wonderful things. Jesus had taught with authority. And so he goes up to Jesus and asks him for his 2 cents. What do you think is the most important? And so in the Gospels, Luke chapter 10, verse 27, this is what Jesus says. So here's the Son of God giving what he thinks is the most important of these laws. And he says, the most important is, worship the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. So that's it. That's number one. You can put that on your fridge or your screensaver. That's it. This is what the Son of God, Jesus, thinks is the most important of these 613 laws. Now, the question is, why is this commandment so important? Why is it so important that we love or worship God with all our heart, soul, and mind? In other words, to worship God with everything we've got, every part of our lives, to hold nothing back. Why is it so important? And you can come up with your own answers to that question. Some of you might say, for example, well, I mean, he's God, right? Which means everything around me and us, I mean, it didn't just burp itself out of existence, so he's got to be responsible for it, right? So if he's responsible for all this, I at least should give him some of my attention from time to time anyways, right? Or some people might have a more negative view of God. They might have this view of God as this really angry guy in the sky who's waiting for you to mess up, and he gets really angry when you don't pay enough attention to him. Just like a spoiled child, if you don't pay enough attention to it, he's going to get mad, and he's going to make life difficult for everybody around him. It's not the most correct idea of God, but you'd be surprised at how many people have that interpretation or that view of God. Whatever answer you come up with to the question, to why is it so important we love God with all our heart, mind, and soul, whatever answer you come up with, keep this in mind. Keep this truth in mind. God does not need your love. God does not need your worship. So you're probably thinking, okay, so what am I doing here on a Sunday morning? You know, I could have stayed home. I could have stayed in bed, right? But that's the truth. God does not need your love. God is in need of nothing. He's perfect in and of himself. He created creation purely out of his goodness. He's got no necessity. He didn't need us around to sort of fulfill something in him that was lacking. God's perfect in and of himself. So why, again, is this commandment so important? Well, the reason is because, as with everything else Jesus commanded us to do, ultimately, it's for our benefit. This adds nothing to God. As a matter of fact, in the prayers in the liturgy, we say very often, our praise adds nothing to your greatness. So this somehow is meeting a very fundamental need that each and every one of us has as human beings. How does this work? Okay, well, let's just play a bit of a word game here, okay? So Jesus says, worship the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul. By the way, whether you are religious or not, a believer or an atheist, every person on the face of the earth worships something. We all worship something or someone. You see, the word worship is made up of two words, worth and ship. Worth-ship. In other words, what do you give the greatest worth to in your life? What is it in your life that you give the highest priority and the highest meaning? That is what you worth-ship or worship. So let's just pretend that instead of God, we inserted something else into that blank. Worship blank with all your heart, mind, and soul. Now, most of you know, many of you know, anyways, I think, that I have an inordinate appreciation for McDonald's French fries. Okay, so I'm going to use that as an example. Instead of worshiping God with all my heart, mind, and soul, I'm going to stick French fries in there, okay? What happens when those French fries are over or they get cold, which is sadly the case. If you go to McDonald's, after 5 minutes, they go cold and no one likes them anymore. What happens? So does my love for them. As soon as the fries are over, so is my love for them. Right? And as an adult, as a young adult, I had to convince myself somewhere along the line that as awesome as McDonald's French fries are, if I treat them as God, I'm going to be disappointed. Right? So, again, it's a silly example. I'm going to move on to another example now that's a little more serious, but not as much. Instead of loving God with all my heart, mind, and soul, I love my smart device, my smartphone, or technology in general. We use that as a symbol for technology, okay? Now, again, it might sound funny, but it really isn't. It really isn't. There are people who seemingly love their smart devices with all they got. That is, if we're simply judging by how much time they're spending on them. And we actually know this now. We know that spending more and more time on these things, particularly if you have social media, spending more and more time on these things leads to anxiety and depression. And this is more than just a simple correlation. We're actually in the realm of sort of causation here, like we know this. And I'm getting this from the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Anyways, I don't have time to get into all of this, but suffice it to say that if you make that your God, if you worship that, you will inevitably be unhappy. Just the nature of created things. Now, let's move on to a third example. Instead of loving God with all my heart, mind, and soul, I love someone else, another person, with my heart, mind, and soul. Now, this doesn't seem all that bad. As a matter of fact, for those of you who are married, you might have expressed this to your significant other on the day of your wedding, like during the speeches. This guy right here is probably saying, let's just pretend he's saying, honey, I love you with all my heart, mind, and soul. And she's laughing because it's like, oh, that's so cheesy. I know where you got that from. But it's a nice sentiment, right? We would almost expect people to say that at their wedding, right? But here's the thing. That person who you fell in love with years ago is destined to get old, to break down, and to die. Or at least they will fail to live up to your expectations for them, which happens inevitably. Here's the idea. So I'm going to tie this all together. Every created thing, okay, whether we're talking about food, whether we're talking about technology, or whether we're talking about another person, every created thing, if we place all our love or too much love on any created thing, we're bound to be disappointed and frustrated. Why? Because created things are temporary. They don't last. C.S. Lewis, the great Christian writer, once said that the greatest tragedy of human history is that we have always tried to find something other than God with which to make us happy. Something other than God. Now, these other things, or other people, food, technology, money, honor, people, these other things are not bad in and of themselves. As a matter of fact, they can be very good. In Genesis, we read where God created creation. He looked at it and said, all this is good. So it's all good. But none of these things is God. And if we try to turn them into God, in other words, if we try to turn any one of these things into the reason for our existence, the reason we get up in the morning, we will be disappointed and frustrated and feeling unsatisfied. But if the object of all your love is not on any created thing, but on God, if all of your love and worship is on God, you will never be disappointed. Why? Because only God is eternal, lasts forever, is the rock on which we can build our house and find security there, only in God. As the psalm says, only in God is my soul at rest. So you see, Jesus is not commanding us to love or to worship God with all your heart, mind, and soul. He's not asking us to love God with everything we have because it benefits him, right? As if God has some sort of a self-esteem issue and he needs our praise and our adulation. He doesn't need it. But ultimately, it's to benefit us. Jesus wants to save us from a life of ultimately disappointment and frustration. Look at the lives of some of the saints that we have in the church. Some of them live really poor, dire lives, and yet they had a joy about them. And when I say joy, I don't mean a giddiness. They weren't, you know, giggly all the time. They were joyful, a profound joy. Why? Because their love and their life was rooted in God, who lasts forever. Now, how do we begin to love God? If this is Jesus' commandment, how do we do it? Well, for starters, God is not some impersonal force. You know, this invisible energy that just holds the universe together. It's kind of the Star Wars image of God, right? The force. God's not an impersonal energy or force. Rather, God is a person. The person of Jesus Christ. The living person of Jesus Christ. Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI once said, and I quoted from him before, but it's such an awesome idea. He said that Christianity, our religion, okay, is not primarily the following of an ethical code. Christianity is not meant to make you a good person, a more ethical person. That's what ethics classes are for, but that's not what Christianity is about. It's not primarily about making you a better person. That's kind of a secondary effect of Christianity. Christianity is primarily the experience, the encounter with a person. The person of Jesus Christ. The living person of Jesus Christ. How do you cultivate a friendship with a person? How do you cultivate friendship with a person? Well, the same way you would with any other person. You spend time with them. And when I say time, I don't mean leftover time. Like at the end of the day, I'm so tired, you know, worked all day. I'm going to spend about 5 minutes in prayer just before I, you know, doze off. Or on your commute on the way to work, I'm not doing anything better, so I might as well pray anyways. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about intentional time, carving out time in your day to spend with this person, as you would with any other person. There's people sitting in these seats right now who can testify, who can tell you that, you know what, growing up, I went to church every Sunday of my life. Never really knew what it was about. It's just something my family did. But after I encountered and experienced the love of this person in my life, everything changed. Everything changed. It's not as if my problems melted away. They didn't. But encountering Jesus gave me a purpose. It gave me meaning. It gave me a meaning that no other person or thing could ever give me. So you'll notice, you probably have noticed, here at Holy Family, we are offering a ton of opportunities and programs for everyone to join, all for the purpose of giving each person the opportunity to encounter his life-changing power in your life. What a difference it makes. To go from having just a head knowledge of Jesus, you can search, you can research about Jesus, you can do a Bible study on Jesus. But encountering him makes you go from knowing who Jesus is to actually knowing him as a person. Huge difference. A huge difference. So, don't be afraid to place all you've got in Jesus. Don't be afraid to worship God with everything you've got, your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Not only will you be free from being let down by any created thing, as is bound to happen, but you will also, and more importantly, know the powerful and personal love of the living God, Jesus Christ.